All right, we are back, Steve, with another episode of the Work Week After Hours.
Yeah, we are, and it's been a little bit of time since we recorded last because one of us was out of the country.
Well, and, out of the country, and everybody's busy. The world's opening back up a little bit, so
it is, man. There's so much we could talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, we were. I took the family, for those who loyally listen or watch in, took the family, and we went to Lisbon to kind of show them around. Wanted to check out a couple neighborhoods, showed the kids around. It was the kids' first time to go, so we wanted to go take them to kind of scout out some neighborhoods, check out, kind of see what's going on. And then it was a great trip. It was a great trip.
All right. Well, let's roll this back. So I want to remind our viewers and let our new viewers know that one of the things that we love talking about is just this whole new future work and how many people are making new life decisions. And you had made a decision. And folks, if you haven't heard these episodes, Shane talking about how he made the choice to go over there and his kids and his wife and the career decisions that they had to make. And what prompted it was just part of this whole great career migration that a lot of people are thinking about. And I think the audience would love to hear sort of like this was the journey of you and your wife went out with a relative of yours to check it out earlier, like June. A few months ago.
We went in June.
That's right. You came back, said, yep, two thumbs up, green light, go. And no one was having second thoughts. And so this was the kids. And I mean, there's so much I want to ask you about, but so give us the rundown. Like what was the game plan for this trip? What were going to be the dimensions of, okay, this was a good trip if it happened. And, you know, did you achieve that, do you think?
Yeah. So kind of backing up even a little bit further to kind of give a bit of context.
Awesome.
Because I'll also kind of share maybe some of my parenting style, I guess, will come out in this a little bit as well. So this all started a year ago during COVID. I have traveled a lot. For those of you who are unaware, I've traveled a lot with business, and just pre-COVID for 9 years or so, I was out of the country 150, 200 days a year. And it's always kind of international has always been a part of our household since then. My family has, my kids know people, have met people, have had dinner at our house with people from multiple different countries. And it's very much a normal thing to them. They think that's normal in the world, but it's very normal to them. And, you know, my wife and I have always talked about it and discussed like, hey, maybe we're going to live overseas someday. Maybe we'll retire, you know, maybe when the kids are gone. We always thought, and my friends in Australia and New Zealand will appreciate this, we always thought Australia and New Zealand would be where we would go. It's a little bit more expensive, not the same tax advantages that are there. So we kind of never really really dove into looking at it. Some friends of ours, I can kind of talk about this now because they've kind of publicly made their plans known, but some friends of ours here locally said, hey, we're looking at doing a soft retirement in Portugal. You know, my wife brings it home to me. They were teachers, so they talked about it at school. My wife brings it home to me. I start doing some research, and I was like, oh, well, yeah, I'm not going to do a soft retirement. I'm going to speed up retirement. So I go and look, and there's all these different tax advantages to living there. There's a better medical system, and none of this is to bash America. It's not a comparison. You know, you can go enjoy something and still love something else. So there's a lot of, the food's great, weather's great. We want our kids to be exposed to culture and to meet people and even more people around the world, be normalized to meet and to be a part of their life. So we did that. We looked into it. At that point, my wife and I started having some, all the parents who have kids or all the adults who listen to this who have kids will understand this, started having some adult stealth conversations where the conversations are kind of going along while the kids are around, but you don't actually like share all the details because you're busy and life's busy and that's the only time you really get to talk. So, you know, we're having these different conversations about, hey, is this really what we want to do? Kids go to bed. Hey, let's watch a video. watch a video, do some research, you know, those kind of things. And I mean, during COVID, you know, you had nothing else to do. You know, just sitting at home. So we had a lot of time to research it. It took about 3 or 4 weeks, my wife and I doing that, to then sit the kids down and say, hey, what if, not Portugal, but what if we would go live somewhere? I believe that transparency and communication with everybody, whether it's Steve and I's business relationship or my wife or my friends, I just believe communication is just always the best way to, you know, to deal with things head on. And, you know, they are like, we'd love to do that. I think it's awesome. I think that's what most kids would say in the initial reaction. If you say, hey, do you want to go live in another country somewhere? They're thinking, heck yeah, let's go. It's like a vacation, right? So we did that. And then it was a very regular conversation, probably a couple times a week for the first couple months. And then it became something that we talked about probably nearly every day. And it wasn't just talking about the good things. I wasn't going to dance around some things so that I could make sure I got my, you know, my plans. We talked about, hey, you're going to miss Nana and Papa. You're going to miss, you know, there's some friends you're going to miss. You know, there's some things you're going to miss. You're not going to eat at this restaurant because they don't have that over there. And that's your favorite restaurant. And, you know, those things. So that led us into June. We went over, checked it out, loved it. As you said, that led us then to say, okay, now let's take the kids. We've talked about it. Let's show them around. And we went October 1st, took them around. We didn't really have anything. Maybe this is foolish on my part, but I didn't actually think that it was not going to go well. Not because I brainwashed my kids or anything like that. I think we've communicated all the pluses and minuses and all the what ifs and researched as a family. We've sat down and watched hours and hours of videos and different things that they just were like, I think a lot of it was like, oh, I already know what that is. Oh, I know what that place is. I've seen it on, you know, I know. So yeah, I don't know that we really had any kind of, I don't know that my wife and I really discussed that at all. We were like, hey, let's go, let's show them around. So we're ready to move next June. Like there was never really any presumptive talk of, oh, what if they don't like it or anything like that.
But you also told us before, I think you mentioned this, I know you've told me that the kids started to do some self-study of Portuguese, right?
Yeah. So a couple months after us breaking the news to them, we started that back in January just to see if they could pick it up. I mean, at that point, I mean, we know so much more now than what we knew then. It was like, hey, let's see if they can pick up the language. They did great. My 4-year-old, who before we got on air, Steve was catching up with, he has this app called Drops, and it's an adult app for languages, and it's really good. The behavioral way that they teach a foreign language is really, really good. And he literally does that rather than play games on his iPad or watch. He was doing that. Like he's picked it up. We were driving in an Uber there one day. I was sitting up front. And he's playing this game, learning. So in between Uber rides, that's what he's doing. And the gentleman driving the car kind of looked at me. He's like, is he Portuguese? I'm like, no, he's not. He's like, he's really good. And I was like, yeah, we're learning. And then it's a conversation of we're moving here. So this is why he's learning it and those kind of things. So
that's
so cool.
Yeah. And so give me the first impressions, you know, I mean, kids are, like some things that they'll say that kind of show their hand a little bit, like some comments they made that kind of give you a sense of where they're thinking about.
Yeah. We got there. We got settled in. I mean, international travel, especially for the first time for some kids or any time, doesn't matter if it's the first time, especially younger kids. We traveled, we were 14, 4, and 10. So, you know, it's a bit rough. You know, so trying to adjust to that part of, you get there in the middle of the day, you're tired, you want to go to bed, your body clock's all off. It's just, you know, just jacked. But we got there, went out, and, you know, just started taking it in. We had to go, mom had to get a coffee. So she had to have some extra fuel to get through the day. And, they have a treat there called a pastel de nata. And it's a custard tart with this really flaky crust. And it's what they're known for, world famous. It's unbelievable. It's like sweet tart, and man, they are unbelievable. So that's the first thing the kids wanted to go to, and they loved it. My son, he's never really been in a big city, so pigeons he didn't know were like a thing. Like that they like just walk around like they're your friend and like walk around to you. So the first 4 or 5 minutes is like, Dad, look, a pigeon. Oh, another one. It's another bird. Like, he's like, why are they so close? You know, he was just like, you know, things we don't think about, but he, you know, and so he wanted to get around and see if he could go catch one. So his whole thing, they let him get real close and he got a little frustrated. But yeah, I mean, we just kind of dove right into it. The next day, we wanted to kind of take it easy and not do it too much. So we kind of took them to a mall. They have a big mall there called the Colombo Mall. Beautiful mall. Went there to kind of, one, it would allow us to use the subway system so they could kind of get, they've never really used the subway system. So have them go use that, make sure they're not overwhelmed, see that they could, you know, they could maneuver this if they had to, kind of thing. And, you know, they did that, went out there. Did some clothes shopping. So that's kind of so they could see that you like, hey, we're going to show you, they have your clothes here, you know, those kind of things. You know, we spent probably more money than we needed to and definitely more time than we needed to, but nobody complained. And I guess that, so to answer your question, that was probably the thing. Kids are going to complain. Kids are going to get tired. Kids are going to get hungry. But when I say we didn't have any behavioral issues, I mean, my kids are very, very well-mannered kids anyway, but no, like we were up until midnight every night because over in Portugal, you typically don't eat dinner until 7:30, 8 o'clock. So it's most of my kids are heading to bed at that time. So they were talking about, oh, I can't wait until we're here and I can do that, or I can't wait to be able to come and do this, or those kind of things. So yeah, it was just like you could tell they were just comfortable.
Yeah. That's super interesting. And I feel like I have an inside track because you were sending me pictures. I was making you send me pictures every day and seeing that weather was good. Do you have a neighborhood in mind where you're thinking that this would be your spot, and did you expose the kids to it, and what did they think?
Yeah, so we stayed in an Airbnb, and most of the time I'll stay in an Airbnb in most international cities because I want to kind of feel what it feels like to live there. I want to feel. I've always done it. I've got a place in Australia and a place called St. Kilda, right near the beach, right just on the edge of Melbourne. I message her. I don't even hit her on Airbnb anymore. I just message her and say, "Hey, are you open? I'll just pay you directly and just work with her." So, we stayed in an Airbnb in the area. The area we're staying in, there's two ways you can reference it. One is called Saldanha, and the other way you can reference it, if you're from there, you would know, is it's called Avenida Novais, and that it's definitely not new, but it's newer than the old world part of Lisbon. Wider streets. It's got bike paths for the kids to ride on, wider streets, wider sidewalks, more of a mix of, if I had to give a demographic there, it's in keep in mind their demographics are much different than our demographics here. So upper middle class to upper class in their world is kind of the area. But there's a lot of working folks there as well. Some startup offices there, some corporate offices there, a lot of little restaurants and nice little places. So yeah, it's really cool.
Nice. And how about schools and stuff like that? Any prospective schools that you guys checked out, and any reaction from the kids?
So we didn't get to go see any schools. So for our first day there was the first day school was back. So things were just super, super busy. So they start school back in September, or 1st of October, I guess. Of course, you know this. Part of the reason you and I have a successful business side of things is we played each other's strengths. So you know me, I'm a researcher. I go and dive into things. I look into things. So what I've done is reached out to a bunch of different folks who I've found on LinkedIn, who are teachers over there or principals over there in different school settings, maybe not in the actual area that we are, but in other parts. And I've set up video calls for me and my wife to meet with them and talk to them and ask them questions and dive all into that. So, you know, some people think some people that haven't done the research or don't know from there looked and thought, oh, maybe they should go to private school. They should do those things. If we were only going to be there for a short period of time, I probably would. But the fact that they're going, I mean, my son who's four, he's going to be five when he's moved there. I mean, here's the reality of it. If he's there when he graduates high school, he's going to be way more Portuguese than he's going to be American. Like it's, so he needs to know the culture. He needs to know how things go to do there. So we've done a bunch of research. We're very, very comfortable with the public school system there. They provide some assistance from a language standpoint, just like that happens here when someone who has English as a second language that comes here. We're very, very comfortable, and it's one of those things we can try it. And if the kids struggle a little bit, my wife's a teacher, we can finish the year homeschooling and then always transition to private school if we need to. So that initial immersion into the culture, we think is a really, really good thing. And all the research we've done kind of backs that up. So,
yeah. Well, having traveled a fair amount in my life, I feel Portugal, of the places that I've been, is more welcoming and more open to difference than a lot of countries in the world, including America, honestly.
Yeah.
And so that's a nice, you know, when I went to Singapore, I was thinking about this the other day. I went to Singapore 2002 through 2004. And as I was getting ready to go, a lot of the people were like, you know what Singapore is? I said, what do you mean? They said, well, it's Asia for beginners. And I was like, oh, they speak English. There's dual national languages, is Mandarin and English. And it was pretty easy to sort of settle in, right? Yeah. And a lot of difference, but relative to what you would face in other countries. And I feel like the Portuguese that I see seems to be welcoming of people from other places.
Yeah, very much so. It's funny you say that. So I used to have two of my team at CCR that worked with me. They were from England, and that's what they said. So Ireland, England, and Portugal are like Europe for beginners, right? Like if you, like until you really get into, you know, the central and you know, eastern part of Europe, you know, it's like here's what's going on. So they are. The Portuguese people are, I mean, English is very, if you've never been, they're super, super welcoming. That not just like, I'm not there on business, so it wasn't like they were rolling out the red carpet to make me feel good. I was going strictly as an anonymous person, just bumping into people and having conversation and meeting people. Mm-hmm. And, they are every, when you're in an Uber and the moment you tell them you're here scouting, they become tour guides. They start telling you around, oh, this neighborhood over here, the mayor, he used to live right here, but then he moved around the street and this, and you want to stay away from this neighborhood. It's not bad, but you probably don't want to live. Like, it's just all these things like, man, these guys are awesome. Like, so we got to the point where as soon as we got in the car, I would engage in conversation and tell them, because I mean, I've got phone numbers of people like, hey, if you need anything, if you ever need anything, not just Uber, like
that's so great.
You let me know. Yeah. The people are great. Mm-hmm. One of the things that stuck out to me, we're looking at renting first before we kind of purchase something, kind of lock us into a neighborhood. Yeah. And the realtors were telling us that. So I asked, I was like, how do your fees work? You know, just trying to understand, you know, how you get paid, who pays you for us finding a rental, those kind of things. Like, no, the homeowner pays us. Our job is to make you completely comfortable. So Shane, if you lock something in, you know, let's say April and you don't move until June, and you get some beds ordered or you get some cleaning stuff ordered from Amazon or whatever, you let us know when it's supposed to be here. We'll make sure somebody's here, you know, to let them in and set up what they need to set up and do what they need to do. And nice. I was like, is that like a charge? And he's like, no. He's like, that's the homeowner's responsibility. It's not like our job is to take care of you and make sure it's an easy transition for you. And I was like,
yeah,
I'm going to be honest with you. I said, it feels like a scam. I trust you. I said, because I'm coming from a place where if someone told me that, I would be nervous.
Gotta be honest with you.
I told him, I was like, I'm not used to that. Like, I'm not used to that level of, again, not knocking the United States, but that's not common. You know, if you're moving in somewhere, they give you the keys like, well, good luck. Like, you know, make sure your rent's on time. You know, it's not.
I love the nuance and the surprise of different cultural differences and different frameworks. Reflecting again on my Singapore experience, you know, when I moved there, I mean, stereo and TV and electronics is important, right? And what happens is, if you're going from the States to Singapore, is the currency, or the current, the electrical current, is the 240 instead of the 120. So your stuff won't work. And if it does, it's a kludgy, you know, hodgepodge of converters and things like that. And it can get really painful. So you got to kind of buy new stuff, but it's okay, because when you leave, you sell it. So it's not, you're just kind of renting it in a way. Well, what I didn't realize when we went to this electronics store is that you go to the store, you pick out what you want. Not only do they deliver, but they set the whole thing up, which is, you know, it's a model that I wish IKEA would adopt, because it's time. I mean, I like doing that sometimes if I have time, but when you're moving somewhere new and everything is like taking time, like if someone's going to take care of that for you, like, great, take it out of the box, put the manuals over here, put the battery in the remote control, get all the plugs in the right places, and then boom, we're just good to go. And I was like, well, why don't we do that in the States? Like, that's great, you know? That's why it's great when you see those new things, right? Like that. Yeah,
you have a large family, and you know how handy that would also come at Christmas time as well. Right. You know, with the kids needing stuff put together. It's like, oh, well, wait a second here. I didn't sign up for all this. So,
yeah.
So
your Airbnb, one of the big, and I'm projecting what I think was the reality in your place, but I don't know this. As Americans, we tend to like really big refrigerators, like mini supermarkets. Did you have a big one in your place? And if you didn't, what did the kids say? Like, hey, where's the fridge? Like,
prefaced, right? So so if we were just going for vacation, I would have left all the shock and awe in place, but, to not overload them and not overstimulate them and distress them out, we prefaced a lot of things like, hey, here's a fridge. Like, so it was a smaller fridge, but we did, as part of the reason we wanted them to see that, you know, and part of it, I enjoy as the person who does all the cooking in the house. I think I'm gonna have to get used to it, because we're still here in America where, you know, where we go and we buy, you know, a whole bunch of groceries to last for
cook.
So over there, you go every day, or you go every couple of days and get your stuff, and you go to the market.
Right.
You can go to the grocery store and get things frozen and things like that. But to be honest with you, it seems a bit foolish coming from where I'm from. If I have the stuff fresh out of the ocean right here that just came out this morning, I can go down here and get it. That'll be a bit of a change, you know, for everybody. But again, I think, and what that also does, because they have different regulations, there's not the same, again, I'm certainly not what you would call a clean eater. I'm not here concerned about what's in what, but like, they don't have some of the preservatives in things. They don't have a certain thing. So things aren't made to last 3 weeks in the refrigerator, and certainly it's not processed. So
it's a good
in a way thing. It almost forces you to eat healthier and more fresh, and you only, for the most part, get whatever fruits and vegetables are in season. So you don't get bananas in January, right? So it's just, you know, here we're used to that. I kind of like that. I kind of like only going to the grocery store and only being able to cook with what's there. So, I'm probably making it sound a bit third world, but that's their tradition. I'm sure they could go get it. I'm sure somewhere you can, but mainstream, that's just not how they do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about a conversation you and I had when you were there, and I was so curious. Like, I was jealous that I wasn't on that journey with you guys. Just the joy of presenting something new and really different to your family is like really, it's very, very powerful. And you shared a comment. I think it was your daughter said, relative to the timing of the move. Do you remember what that was? I was like, hey. Like, what's the vibe? You know, how are the kids doing? And are they just jet lagged? Are they just crumpy and cranky? And you're just like, no, man, they're jet lagged, but they're totally into it. Like, and your daughter said something, which for me was like, okay, this is a sign. This is all playing in a good direction.
Yeah. She was like, so is there any way we can move earlier? Like, can we just, I was like, well, no, we can't. Like, I'm glad. And that's actually kind of backfired a little bit, because it's kind of taken a little bit of, now all of a sudden it's like, I really don't want to, they're back home and they're like, I really don't want to be here. I'd rather be over there. And you know, and to your point, yes, for me, the pride of knowing I'm providing a life-changing opportunity in so many different ways to my kids, And to myself, I mean, there is certainly a selfish part of it, but to my kids, how it will change them and reframe their world. Like I talk, and this is not to toot your horn, but one of the things that you and I have in common is we've traveled the world. You've lived, you know, around the world, and I guess I've add up all my days and I've lived around the world, but,
sure.
There's something that comes along with that. There's a piece of, you know, taking, you know, my son, I think about it right now and I think he's 4. He's already technically been to 2 countries. We had to stop over in Amsterdam and then into Lisbon.
Did you go out of the airport in Amsterdam?
Well, we didn't because they had just put new COVID restrictions in place. Sure, so we didn't. Sure, I wanted right. to take him that's down right. to the canals and all that stuff to kind of see that. But I mean, we're already planning. So we're going to have a light Christmas so we don't have to have a bunch of stuff to pack and take over with us. So we've kind of discussed, like, let's put together an experience fund. Like, if you're okay mm-hmm. with not having a little bit lighter Christmas, let's put that money towards a trip next summer and let's do some different things. So they like that. So we're over the next week or two, we're going to start planning out and we're going to hang it up in the kitchen and, hey, this is what we're going to start doing. And, you know, everybody they don't have to financially pitch in, but in their mind they are. So they are kind of helping and, you know, there's some ownership and some appreciation in it. And, you know, we're going through it and like, he's going to probably see London, Paris, probably a couple towns outside of Paris in France, and probably another country. And they don't know this. I don't even know if they can hear me, but quiet as it's kept, I'm actually trying to plan a trip before they go back to school from Lisbon into Australia in August. So, you know, they're going to get to see so much of what they, of this world that they, so what's 14 years going to look like for him when he's 18, 19 years old and he's probably going to have half the countries nicked off his passport and he'll be the coolest single man on the planet at 18 because he's seen all this and knows all this. So, you know, it's so cool to think about that. And to come from where I come from, a guy who moved 17 times the first 18 years of my life and homeless at 2 points during high school and these different things, to come from where I come from, there is a bit of pride in that that comes along with that. There is.
Yeah. Yeah. I was having a great discussion with someone recently relative to education, and the conversation was kind of wrapping around, well, life experiences versus academic education. And when I reflect on my own career, I really believe the time at university that I spent playing sports served me more than the time I spent in a classroom. Now, that's not something I would want my kids, you know, to preach to my kids, like, hey, definitely spend more time in the gym. But the path I chose is one where how people handle certain circumstances was a bigger diverse learning experience in all these different competitive environments, how people handle winning, how people handle losing, how people handle being from behind, how people handle a new team member, how people handle a team member that they didn't choose, you know, and all these things. When I look back, like, that really equipped me for the world of human resources more than studying the Third Reich, rise and fall of the Third Reich in Nazi Germany. Yep. Like, and so, Not to say that, hey, my ability to apply my learnings on the basketball court was definitely enhanced by my ability to learn how to express them and articulate them and to break them down when we were studying in school. But I feel most of us grossly underestimate the power of these experiences. I mean, look at what a school calls sports, extracurricular, not core. Extracurricular.
Yep.
And like, this is part of the language of education and learning. Like, you can't even put a value on just that one trip. If you never go back to Portugal, the minds that you've opened in your kids is remarkable, just remarkable. And your 4-year-old, he's not going to know, you know, the memory kicks in, I think, around 7.
Yeah.
He may not remember the United States, you know, if you stay there for a number of years, which is really wow. And he's going to be the first one, you know, this, he's going to be speaking fluently before all of you.
He'll probably have it by the time we get there. I tell you what, Steve, let's weave this into the work week a little bit.
Yeah.
So you've kind of started hitting on a topic Some of what, you know, I'm very passionate about, but I know you've talked about it, is the barriers to finding great people and great talent to come into your company. Some of them, they're all over the news. We can find all over the news of all these excuses that every company and every journalist and every pundit has. They're blaming it on everything external, right?
Yeah.
But what if internally as leaders, we are harming ourselves, right? And one of those things, I actually did a video today from a lady, and you guys, Steve, I know you and I have talked about this. If you haven't listened, so I gave a talk a couple years ago. I'll tell it really quick. I gave a talk a couple years ago to a large group of HR leaders. I went in and talked about startup leadership and things that I did and how I managed bouncing around the world and still had a team and taking them with me and all these different things. And then at the very end, I acted like I was done. And I said, hey, real quick, I said, how come none of you guys have called me for an interview? And they were all kind of looking like, what do you mean calling for an interview? And I was like, well, I knew you all were going to be here. So I went online and tried to apply or applied at all of your companies and no one called me. And I wish you could have seen their face looking back at me like, oh my goodness, what just happened? I said, because you've all sat here and bragged about how I could be the boss. And I kind of baited them into it, but they agreed.
Yeah.
Like they all agreed I could be the boss of their company or the owner of their business and these different things. I said, but yet I don't qualify enough to have an entry level job at some of your places of work. Mm-hmm. I said, because you have a box that has to be ticked that says you have to have a degree. I don't have a degree. So you're talking about these experiences in life, kind of going back to what you're saying, of experiences hold way more value in today's world. I understand 40, 50, 60 years ago, probably not as much, right? Traveling to China without technology influencing the world really probably wasn't going to affect me in small town Kentucky getting a job and being successful. But now it has. And now we live in a world where it does. So how can we gauge, how can we create? And maybe you and I don't have the answer, but I think we need to get the people who listen to this, your professionals, your leaders, you're in the HR space of some sort. And well, I think you and I want to do is kind of spark some conversation around how do we piece this together to where people start looking at things that you can't necessarily quantify to a score or to a degree or to a GPA or all of these different things.
Well, this is going to lead us into our next episode. I've sort of mildly pitched it to you like, hey, I think we should think about this because it's just percolating. But when I think about your journey and your adventure, and I think about the state of the union that we look at today, I am so happy we're in the pandemic because it's going to force people to have to try new stuff.
Yes.
And if you can't hire someone and you got to get something done, someone's going to get, it's kind of a crude analogy, someone's going to get a battlefield promotion. They're not qualified. They're not ready. Their resume doesn't say they can do it. They're going to have to figure it out.
Yes.
And you know what? They're going to find out more times than not, that person crushed it. The person accelerated, learned it, applied new stuff, taught themselves, figured it out faster than they thought. And we've got this blockage that you need to go to this school to study this topic, to do this job. And that's, you know, going back to the conversation I was just relaying with this person I had recently, like, we got to stop thinking about school or education or studying this gets you there. Life experiences prepare you for more. And the best part is your journey is preparing your kids to adapt,
yes,
to adjust, to be agile, yep, because what you eat, the time zone you're in, the way people talk, how they communicate, their body language, everything's different. And even if you just go to one other country and you know that, now when you meet someone from a different country, you know, huh, there's a different set of variables here. And that is so powerful to open your eyes to thinking creatively, thinking as a team member, working with different people. And that's kind of how I'm thinking about this, Shane, right now, which is this moment in time is the shortage of supply of talent, where everyone is kind of hitting pause, like, I'm not sure I want to go back to that until I have to. So I'm going to look at other options before I make a choice. People are hitting pause and they've been burned and they've seen their parents burned and they've seen, you know, all this time that they've given not be really valued by some organizations and some industries. And so now we've got this moment where it's like, well, you're not going to hire those people, so you better figure it out, which means taking a gamble on some people who on paper may not be fully ready.
Right? Okay. So I think real world advice and insight is always valuable. Companies seek from all over the world, contact us and seek out your advice on a regular basis. So I think your opinion and your insight is valuable. So I want to give the folks who listen or watch a little bit of peek behind the curtain in the real world that maybe people see your resume and say, well, he's not working anywhere. He doesn't really know, like he doesn't know how to take a chance on somebody. He doesn't know what's going on right now. So you and I connected, we were friends, and I had never been an agent for an executive speaker before. Had never done it. Full transparency. You know that obviously, but for everybody else. You and I connected, and I would argue you had way more to lose than the person sitting at company A, B, C, or D at any level, senior level, where they need to think outside the box and make a hiring decision based off of what a person can achieve, not based off of what they've achieved or based on their career path. So I don't have a college degree. I was very transparent. Now, you and I were friends before this, so you knew way more about me than anybody else would when you come into the hiring process. So you knew even more of my flaws because I'm very upfront about my flaws and who I am. You had more to lose because your livelihood depends off of the success of directly coming into you. So what I think it's important, and I'm not looking for any kind of praise. What I'm looking for is for you to share openly a little bit and like some of the thought processes and how you did that to maybe spark something in someone who's listening to where they know of that candidate, but they know on paper it doesn't look like that person's the right person, but their gut's telling them yes. How did you process that, or would you recommend someone? Because you have went through this.
Right.
You have went through this.
This is so fascinating. I thought a lot about this, but I never thought about it in the way that you just described. So when you and I met, I was ready to publish a book. I was feeling very frustrated because I'm going into an industry that I had very little knowledge about. I was knowing that I probably needed to do PR in a very guerrilla fashion, which is very different. Publishing industry is like a 1940s business model that just hasn't evolved. Anyway, that's a whole nother story for another time. And I was testing. I was like testing. And you're like, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And so of all the people that I'm talking to in my ecosystem, you showed more interest. You showed more thoughtfulness. And you had done some things that were new and different. And you'd pioneered some, you know, in your own business. In ways. And then I felt like I also had a basis of trust with you, regardless of domain expertise. I had trust because I feel like we were on the same playgrounds as kids in a way. We could kind of finish each other's sentences in some respects relative to the world of people, the world of business, and looking at it from a unique lens. So that got my guard down and my comfort level up and my trust. We all want people around us that we trust. So that was really, really important. And the fact that you'd done something new. So then I didn't know what I didn't have or what I needed. I had no idea, but I knew that it was probably going to need to, you know, be different than what I was dealing with. And for those people that don't know, I mean, most of the revenue from my work comes from speaking and teaching. Like that's it. And the book was going to be a launching. That's what I love to do. And speaking, and the book is going to be an invitation to allow that to happen more. So that's kind of how I looked at it. And so I don't even remember how we got started. It's like, well, how about if you let me show you some things with this? How about you let me show you some things with that? And you similarly you could say that I had more to lose. I feel like you had a lot to lose too, because you're turning down stuff to dedicate time in my direction.
I completely shifted everything. So I went from doing marketing and consulting for businesses to saying, those customers are most of those customers now I'm no longer servicing. And now I'm going to put all my chips on the table. But that being said, there's still a difference in your like, yes, we both could go, but you, we're partners, and yes, I'm your agent, so I work for you in ways, and
right.
Yes, those are the case, but you still had to make a decision that could have financially hurt you. Sure. There still has to, like, so how did you identify, in the mind, and some of it maybe was, hey, I trust you, like, whatever, and I'm just going to roll the dice and screw it. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, right? No, it was, I definitely feel I mean, maybe I'm an entrepreneur, but I don't think so. I have a very,
you are. Yeah.
I have a low tolerance for risk. I think you have a much higher tolerance, but so I kind of looked at it like this, like, okay, I'm in a new business. I have someone here in you, Shane, that knows about the podcasting world, that knows about marketing, that knows how to get eyes and ears way better than I do. And that's what I want to try to achieve. And your experience in the recording industry had also sort of prepared you for, like, hey, I've got a brand, I got a person, I got a brand, and I know how to amplify that. And you impressed me enough that I'm like, okay, I want to do something different. I remember you and I were sort of trying to hammer this out. And I said, well, Shane, I need to have some, like, some goals and some targets that we need to hit. And you're like, Steve, this was a good moment for me to sort of wrap my head around this. You're like, Steve, that doesn't make any sense because it's all an experiment right now. Like, we're trying stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and those things are maybe good to have a true north at a high level, but at a specific level, it may not work. And it's sort of my brain was like, oh, I don't know about that. Like,
you're very analytical. Working? Like, you process things in a very analytical way.
Like, how am I going to know if this is working or not working? Because I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah.
So then what I started to see was, okay, what do we all want to do in our work? I want to teach and I want to speak.
Yeah.
I don't want to be negotiating contracts. I don't want to be answering phone calls. I don't want to be setting up schedules. I want to do what I do best. And I could see that was not only easy for you, but it was really enjoyable for you.
Yeah.
Like, that's the, you know, I said, okay, I think he's got a strength and an interest, and I'm willing to sort of, let's go, let's give this a try. Yeah. And well, see,
it was like a 4-page email that he sent me. I woke up one morning to this big long email, and he sent me this email. I'll give you some context. I'm not going to share all the details, but I get this big long email and essentially like, hey, let's do this. And I was like, all right. I literally caught me off guard. Like, because I didn't come, like, you and I didn't have a friendship where there was a financial exchange. It was, hey, we're just friends. We talk about sports. Right. We talk about our kids. And then it was, hey, if you can help me out a little bit, help me on this stuff. Like, yeah, okay, I'll help you. I'll come in. And then it was like, okay, I want to partner on you with all of it. Let's, you know, be my agent, help me out, those things. And I was like, whoa, I remember telling my wife, I was like, hey, babe, like, I need you to come read this email because I wasn't expecting
this.
Is he
saying what I think he's saying? Or
I was like, you know, are you cool with this? Cause like I'm going to have to go like all in, like, you know, all like completely shift what I'm doing. And keep in mind at this point, we're also planning Portugal. We're also like, all this is on the table of where, like, if this goes south, the kids, oh, sorry, I'm not going to Portugal right now. You know, like all these different things. So there was,
let me also add on to this, Shane. I mean, my experience at LinkedIn in building a company and helping architect a company in an industry that hadn't existed before to revolutionize recruiting, to revolutionize professional networking, gave me a front row seat to taking, you know, bets and placing bets on people that maybe the path didn't seem linear, didn't seem obvious. And so I had built up and I'd seen heart surgeons become data scientists. I'd seen accountants become heads of our food program. I'd seen people who were financial analysts go into running our whole real estate organization. I'd seen business development people go and run countries for us, women in male-dominated economies. And it's like, okay. And I seen the energy. And when I started to see you get more excited than I'd seen you as we got on, not more, you know, not more cautious or not more nervous or not more quiet. And I saw the cadence of our communication. I'm like, okay, I was having the same conversation with my wife. I was like, you know, I never thought I was going to do this, but I really feel like this is like serendipity. Like this man, she's like, well, how'd you find him? I was like, I think some kind of weird algorithm on the internet sort of that Shane was using, yeah. which is another sort of like, that was really cool yeah. to me. You know, like you reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to be in this podcast? I'm like, I'm not an educator. What are you talking about? And you're like, you know, kind of like Yoda, well, maybe there's something here. And that just evolved. And yeah. so, but that sort of revolutionary thinking that you brought to how we first met, I just see play out still.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, yeah. I'm happy to share with the audience. I mean, in the sort of formally, we've been working together for 4 or 5 months now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I feel my business is like tripled, quadrupled, you know, compared yeah. to what it was before we met. And definitely the book has given some sure. credibility, but the voice, the share of voice and the way we've been able to do that has been really phenomenally, I mean, it's better than I thought it was going to be, honestly. And that's kind of what you want, right? Like I didn't, yeah. I had a view like, okay, it's going to be better. And you and I kind of went back and forth. Sometimes you've been like, oh, way more optimistic. And then sometimes I've been way more optimistic. And I feel sort of like we're trying stuff and we're seeing how it plays, you know?
Yeah.
And
it seems to be good. That, yeah. So that plays into, you know, where hopefully if you're listening to this, I think there's a couple common things that have been shared. Two people took a risk. Right. Two people took a risk. One person probably took a bigger risk than the other. You've mentioned multiple times how you feel like I don't have any kind of career. What do you call it? A concern that I'm not going to be able to find a job or, you know,
insecurity. You don't have career insecurity.
Yeah, yeah, not at all. Not
You're
at
a survivor.
Mm-hmm. Just because I believe I can kind of go, I can create things out of thin air. I've done it. Mm-hmm. I know once you do it once, you know how to do it again. So, but I think if you're in a corporate environment, there's a bit of uncertainty and a bit to lose on both parties, right? If I go to person in this department and I see that you actually probably on paper, you don't line up for this leadership role, but I think you would work. I'm kind of putting some skin in the game by recommending you and putting you out there, and you're putting some skin in the game and potentially losing a really good thing that's this cush job and you're secure and you're rocking and rolling. So I think there's this common theme between you and I. We know this because it's what we do, but it's communication. There's been clear and open communication. You and I have had difficult conversations. We've had late night conversations, early morning conversations, family conversations, kids conversations, all those different things. And I think and it goes back to your book, not to plug it, but it goes back to your book. The future of work is being more human. So if in a work where right now, and you and I both know this, every smart person who's way smarter than you and I right now is trying to solve this whole talent problem, either with AI and robots or mm-hmm. technology to find the talent, the human beings to do it, right? I feel like at this point we get pitched something once a week. What if we just sat down and we just started to have some really open conversations with people? What if we created as higher management, we created that environment to where the people who are on the front lines needing to do this, we gave them autonomy to start these things? Because you can wait around right now. And if you've, I'll say this, if you've got a department and you need to fill a department right now, it's going to take you a very long time to fill that department right now, mm-hmm. if you're trying to do it externally. But you might have somebody internally who has some skill sets who can give you 4 months ahead of the competition on this, or, you know, these different things. And, you know, I wanted to share that because it is a very real world thing. You have went through this. You had your financial stake. It wasn't the company's money you were playing with.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
It wasn't the company's money you were playing with. You know, you were making a bet and like, hey, so you are an entrepreneur. You are okay with risk.
And you know, and Shane, what is really I think is a pitfall that a lot of companies are falling in right now. And I don't want to point a finger, but this
sure,
the
sure.
system that's been built. If you're a recruiter right now, and a hiring manager says, go find this. And a recruiter is like, okay, I got two people. I got Steve, who's got 75, 80%. And he's been doing this for 40 years. And I got Shane, who's done it for a year, but he's got all this other really interesting experience. Who's the candidate? Who's the hiring manager want to see? Want to see the person who's been doing it a long time. They don't want to, you know, and the recruiter has got to put their reputation on the line. If they're going to put someone who's not a perfect fit, but has greater future potential to make a bigger impact. And that's a shame, because that's what we've done. We're like, hey, recruiter, you got to find the person, make the safe hire. And we're solving for now. We're not solving for tomorrow. Yeah. And that's a big systemic blockage, I think, that many recruiters and many hiring managers are falling into, which is like, and I tell this to all my friends. I have dozens of friends. I'm this, but I want to be that. And but no one's calling me for that. I said, yeah, because recruiter is overburdened and too busy. And if they see a round peg and a round hole, that's what they're going to do first. And you're going to take some work, and you're going to have to take some of their reputational credibility, and they're going to have to go out on a limb, and they don't know you. And it's going to take time, and they're not closing all these other deals that are making them money. So why would they take a risk on you? You know, and so that this is why, and most recruiting teams are understaffed and under budgeted. And so that's part of the inertia that we've built in this system. That's like clogging the arteries for people to figure out how to be more creative. It's frustrating.
So I've mentioned, I have a person close to me, who left a more corporate world in marketing and doing some things, took a chance on this really big startup that will probably be this huge public company very, very soon. And he took this role, not in like a very senior leadership role, but like more of a department of a company that this larger company acquired. He's been there 5 months. He just contacted me Sunday and said, hey, it looks like I'm getting my fourth promotion in 5 months. And jeez, they actually want me to go to the main company and be over all the companies doing what I'm doing. He's like, it's going to cause me to change up my schedule. I'm going to save them from hiring four other people. Should I ask for a raise? And I was like, well, you definitely should ask for a raise. Like that definitely should happen. Yeah, yeah. But also hearing his joy, and I could even read it through some of it in text of seeing the joy of being appreciated has created him in a shorter period of time, or created a loyalty to this company in a shorter period of time because they've recognized. And by the way, he does not have a college degree. He has never stepped foot into a college classroom before. Never even thought about it. Started working and doing what he's working at 17 years old, at 17 years old, and almost didn't graduate high school because he was making decent money going to work after class and after high school was out, and then going to work and making money doing what he's doing now. Jeez. So in this, he's like, how do they appreciate me? Like, he's like, this is almost uncomfortable. It almost doesn't like feel real. I'm like, well, that's what good leadership does. Good leadership recognizes. And that is a testament to their culture, because you're not dealing with the founders at this point. This is a multi-billion dollar company. So you're like, you're not dealing with the founders. That culture has trickled down and given autonomy to people that they're poaching from within their company. They went and pulled him out, and they'd say, hey, first they said, are you okay working in both and helping in both? And then now they said, well, hey, are you willing to do that? You tell us who you need, and you tell us who you need to move over, and you tell us who we need to hire, and that'll be your team. And you can, like, if you can do this. And he's like, hearing the joy, he's in his late 30s, but they've created a loyalty in 5 months. He's worked in places for 4 or 5 years in other billion-dollar companies, created millions and millions of dollars of new revenue for him, and been treated as if they didn't even know him. And he's getting to see that. By the way, he's completely remote, working as technically a contractor. This company is based out of Australia, and he's here in the United States. It's wild.
I love it.
It's wild. And those are real world experiences. Like, it's actually happening.
Yeah. I say this a lot when I talk to college students or high school students or anyone thinking about entering the workforce. And that is what your friend has learned, which is sometimes you look at a job and you go, I don't know. Doesn't have all the stuff that I really am good at. There's a lot of stuff that's kind of not sexy. And look how fast that job has changed. Oh. In four months, five promotions. That's insane. And that's not the norm, but that's kind of the future of work right now. And if you're in a good organization that recognizes your quality, but every job description today, it's not worth its weight a year out. It's going to be so different. So look at the company, look at the people, look at the culture and say, okay, I can partly find my way in here and maybe I'm going to build a different path, you know?
Yeah. You and I were on a call talking to a company. And for those of you who, if you're listening in Kentucky, let me put it in Kentucky terms that Steve just said. Steve said, bet on the jockey, not on the horse.
That's right.
So if you hire somebody and you feel like they've just got a talent, because on paper, and I'm not talking about myself, but I'll just take myself out of it. On paper, if I were to go apply for a job to head up a new region internationally for a company, on paper, I don't match. But I've established multiple partnerships with multiple national governments and very large companies. I communicate for you in a lot of ways on a regular basis, and I know I can do it. So it's, but these things, you know, because we have this thought that if your resume doesn't, or if you're like, how do you get the experience until you have the experience? Like, you know, it's these things of, wild. So, kind of taking it back to Portugal again, it's all part of it. You took a chance on me and I'm taking a chance on Portugal. And, you know, it's funny. I'll move there. And then all of a sudden now you'll be in Europe all the time with more business and more opportunities. And that's kind of that's where you're hoping. So, it's a wild journey.
It is a wild journey. And I think preparing ourselves, preparing our children for being open to new adventures is an incredible gift. And I'm excited to be part of your family journey. Excited to have this conversation. And another good episode. There we go.
Oh, man, it's great. It was great. And I really appreciate the opportunity to kind of share my story. Steve finds my story interesting. So he wants you guys to hear it. And, I'm sure there'll be some bumps in the road and some challenges ahead. But I'm looking forward to sharing it.
Shane, there's not a week that goes by that you don't run into someone and you tell them you're moving to Portugal and they go, whoa, run that back.
Well, really?
How many times has that happened since you made this decision?
Well,
once or twice a week.
Oh,
right? Do it too.
Yeah, so I literally laying in bed last night and all of a sudden I get a message. So there's a story, and I actually want to share the story of one more really cool thing that came out of this trip. So my 4-year-old son, and it kind of ties into this. So my 4-year-old son loves playgrounds. What 4-year-old doesn't? They love playgrounds. Well, Portugal and Lisbon, they're everywhere. There are literally playgrounds everywhere. So it's a very, very family friendly city. So we would go every day and go to the playground every day. He's living the dream. And he's trying to interact with the kids that are there. Some of them would speak English, most of them not, or at least not at first. So then he's having to get work through that at 4. And that could be tough. You could take that as they don't like me. I can't do this. I'm frustrated. He never once got mad about it. He would come to us and say, hey, I'm trying. What should I say? My wife, if she was there and I wasn't there, she's forced to have a conversation with the mom and hey, now all of a sudden she's engaged and whatever. So on the last day, and if you follow me on LinkedIn, you've seen me post about this story. On the last day, and this just epitomizes everything of why I want to move from a family standpoint and probably from a professional standpoint too, because there's something that'll probably come out of this as well. So we were at the playground and my daughter was kind of sitting with me and my wife and this young boy about my daughter's age who was playing with the kids on the playground comes up to my daughter and is like, hey, do you want to meet my dad? And I'm like, well, no, she doesn't want to meet your dad. Like my daughter's not going to go meet your dad. So he looks at me, he says, well, do you want to meet my dad? And at first, full transparency, I was tired. We're leaving the next day early in the morning. Like I got to be up at 2 a.m. I'm not really looking forward to it. I was like, no, I'm okay. He's like, are you sure you don't want to meet my dad? And then it clicked. I was like, you know what? Maybe this young man is just really proud of his dad. Like, he just loves his dad. Yep. So I said, you know what? I'll meet your dad. And I'm a big guy. I'm 6'6". I'm all the way on the other side of the park. And all the playgrounds over there have these kiosks. I say a kiosk, but it's like a concession, a really nice concession stand where they have beer and wine and coffee and crepes and sandwiches and all this stuff. Well, he's sitting there relaxing. Kids are playing on the playground. He's probably enjoying a cold beer, just probably reading the newspaper, listening to a podcast or something. So his son takes off running. And you could tell he gets to his dad way before I get to him. And he's like, hey, you know, and you could tell he's looking at me thinking, son, what in the hell are you doing? Why is this big man coming to me?
Why is a big scary man coming my way?
So I get there. I was like, he came up in full transparency. Your son wanted me to meet you. So at the very least, I'm Shane. We shake hands. We start talking. And I was, you know, he's like, where are you from? So for those that when you traveled abroad, and you're English, and I say English, when you're American, you speak English, it's a very common thing to have the desire to want to ask people where they're from. It's not always appropriate, but you have the desire to do it, right? So you have to find unique ways if you think that there's a hint that they're from somewhere else, because I genuinely want to understand where they're from. So we were talking or whatever, and he's like, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, you don't think I'm from here? And he's kind of laughing. He's like, well, I was wondering what part of Portugal that country twang was from. And I was like, well, I'm from Kentucky. And he's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. He's like, why are you here? I was like, well, we're looking to move here. He's like, oh, really? He's like, yeah, me and my family, we're from Pakistan and we are moving here. We did what's called a golden visa. So they bought a property that's considered an investment into the country. They only have to spend 2.5 weeks every 2 years in the country, and they have residency. Whoa, so, wow. Yes. So then that gives them access to the medical, that gives access to, they can apply for a passport, 5 years, like different things. So I was like, oh, okay. He's like, you know, this, and we're going, I was like, what do you do if you don't mind me asking? He's like, well, my family, we own this textile company. We make all the uniforms for the Pakistani army and the police and some other countries. I was like, man, it's fantastic. He's like, what do you do? I was like, man, I work for this jerk. His name's Steve. I'm kidding. I was giving some context and different people I work with. And he was like, oh, okay. He's like, man, that's really awesome. He's like, so you're going to be able to do that from here? I was like, oh yeah. I mean, I can, like, all I need is the internet and a phone. I can do it from anywhere. And he's like, oh, that's a great place to be in. I was like, yeah, it's nice. And we went through, and like, we had, it's probably a 20-minute conversation, and we had this really awesome, beautiful exchange that my wife ended up coming over. My wife, very, very shy. My wife ended up coming over. She saw this exchange happen. It was like, oh, Shane's giving a good body language. I'm going to come over. I'm curious. She met this gentleman. Before you know it, here, this white American guy from Kentucky is sitting here talking to this Pakistani man in Lisbon, and he's giving me he goes, hey, do you eat Mexican food? I'm like, hey, I'm from America. That's like part of American cuisine. Like, that's part of you're not American unless you eat Mexican. And he's like, man, right around the corner, there's this Mexican restaurant. You got to try it. And I looked at him and I said, you know, the irony in this, I said, most people in your part of the world and my part of the world would not be able to wrap their head around the fact that this just happened with the two of us standing here, who we are, and this is what you're doing. Yeah. He looked at me and he said, and he kind of patted me on my shoulder, and he's like, you know, people like you give me reassurances that there's good people in the world. He said, because we're here and we're doing the residency here because sometimes in our country things get unstable and we never know what's going to happen in the Middle East. So this is a safe place for me to be able to take my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said, what are you doing? He's like, I've got to go to bed tonight because I've got to get up and go to Paris tomorrow to meet with their police department about doing their uniforms. And I was like, ah, man, I wish we were here another day because I'd love to take your family out.
Your business online.
Yes. And so I said, are there any good Pakistani restaurants in town? And he's like, yes. So we exchanged phone numbers. We're on WhatsApp together. And I was like, the next time you come, I would love, let it be my treat, but I would love for your family to meet my family and us to go, and you guys educate my kids on the food and the culture from Pakistan, because I want them to see that. It is what it is. I live in Kentucky, and it probably is not just Kentucky, but if you tell someone, hey, I just met somebody from Pakistan, the first place that their mind goes is to a negative connotation about where this person's from. You know, it's dangerous, terrorism, these different things. And he and I talked about that. Like, he said even so much that when he was in college in Canada, he actually would tell people that he was from Mexico or from different places in Argentina, like Argentina, because of his skin color, because he didn't want people to know he was from Pakistan. And so he's like, even though that stuff isn't in our country, like people think it is, like that we get placed in. And the first place that would have went. So now my kids, they don't think that, because they saw me, they came up, you know, they had an exchange. That's not what they'll see when they hear Pakistan. They're going to think, oh, this really nice man and his kids who were really nice to me and spoke English. And that's awesome. And that to me is the epitome. And it was only one day, and I'm going to go live in this place. It is very much a melting pot that is very accepting of all people. And I can't wait. You know me, I love meeting new people and connecting the dots and moving. I love it. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're going to find more people like you there too than a lot of places. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably so.
All right, man, that's going to be a wrap. Wow, Shane, great stuff. Great insights and another great episode. This is the Work Week After Hours. I'm Steve Cadigan with my pal,
Shane Howard.
And we'll look forward to seeing you on another episode. Please like, share, follow, rate the podcast, tell your friends about it. We got a lot of interesting stuff coming up, and I think we're going to get into more skills and recruiting in the next few episodes, because this is a deep, deep ocean. I think we need to start poking at it pretty hard.
I agree. We'll catch you next time.